There are snacks back there. So the next part of this, I guess I'll stay here. We are going to talk a little bit about the actual plan itself, and I think that was a great question about, you know, are we starting from scratch again? And the answer is no. We're not reinventing the wheel here. There was a great plan that was put together already in 2010, and so that really is the basis of this. So we're not looking to completely just scrap it and start from scratch. We want to look at it, use the pieces that we can, you know, keep intact, so we're not wasting energy on those kinds of things, and really trying to focus on the areas that need to be updated for one reason or another, whether it's out of date or some changes have happened, or we need to reframe how those opportunities are written so they're more feasible, or we think of some other great things. So that's really the focus of this. So the actual structure of the plan is going to pretty much stay the same as it is now. And if you haven't, if you're interested in reading the existing plan, it is out on the plan website. So you can go out there, take a look at it. As Elizabeth mentioned, it's all really dictated by HRS 342G. It's very clear all of the different elements that are required to be in the plan. And so, you know, there are program elements, facility capacity and siting elements. There's a whole element on actual waste stream assessment. It goes through, there's requirements to do looking at source reduction and recycling and bioconversion, aka composting or AD. There is requirements to look at special waste and household hazardous waste and all of the different facilities that are solid waste related, to look at what you have, if they're at capacity, if those actual buildings and other infrastructure need to be updated, if they're going to last you into the future, and then also look at public education and information. There's also a materials marketing and procurement element. So all of these chapters, the reason they're there is that there's an actual requirement in the statute that they are covered. And that, you know, as the statute lays out all the details, it's pretty specific what is supposed to be included. So the actual structure of the plan is dictated. Now where we get to get creative and collect feedback is starting to look at what opportunities and options that we want to put in each of those sections. So what I'd like to do is we've put together a draft outline that we're going to be using to, you know, talk about the various topics within each of these 13 sections. So I'm going to exit out of the slideshow and actually just kind of start working our way through that outline with you. And you know, I love if there's a topic, like if we're talking about source reduction and you want to talk a little bit more about that at that time, that's great. The next period after this part of the agenda, we will be asking for each person, we'd like to go around the table, round table style, and just get, you know, 2 to 3 ideas about any opportunities that you see or any concerns that you have. So as we go through each of these sections, you know, be thinking about, oh, I want to make sure I talk about this, if you don't feel comfortable talking about it when we're at that part of the outline. So, all right. The outline up here. Is that big enough? Can you see, or do I need to make it a little bigger? Okay. So one thing that is slightly new, it's really not rocket science, but we would like to add an executive summary to this plan. The last one didn't have that, and it's just a nice thing to have as part of a plan, so you get all the information in one spot. So we will be adding that, and you get your regular acronyms, abbreviations, glossary kind of stuff. Most of these plans do start with the overview of existing solid waste management system conditions. And so what we are changing things a little bit around with how things are presented. So in the last plan, they had sort of an overview of the existing conditions in this section, and then in each subsequent section, when they covered, for instance, source reduction, they talked about the background again, so it was a little bit repetitive. So what we're going to try to do is talk about all of the background, the existing conditions in this section, so that when you get into the specific section, like source reduction, what we're really focused on is the opportunities, and we're not rehashing all of the stuff that we just talked about in the first section.
And I wanted to point out the background, I think, is where we talk about the waste characterization study,
yes,
right? And so last time, as part of the plan, we did have a consultant perform a waste characterization study. We recently did one, and that was in 2017. So I'm going to pull that into the Integrated Solid Waste Management Plan webpage so you folks can look at it. I imagine in subsequent meetings we will go over the waste characterization, because that's really how you can see what's in the landfill and, you know, what the opportunities are for getting that stuff out. There's a lot of paper, fibers in the landfill. There's a lot of construction demolition in the landfill right now.
And that is actually one bit of homework that I had in mind for you all before the next meeting, is that I would like you to look at it, and I'll probably put together just a couple of questions or things to be thinking about as you're looking at it. You don't have to, we're not going to test you, but it's helpful to take a peek at it so that when we do talk about it, you see what's out there. We can direct you to the figures and charts that have the most important information, so you don't have to look at everything. But you know, it's really wonderful that the county actually did a waste characterization study with the previous plan and this plan, because now, you know, we have this great opportunity to see if there was a change. You know, they might not completely be apples to apples, because everybody, you know, each characterization study can be set up differently, and it was different consultants, so they probably did things differently. But it does give you at least a, you know, comparative basis to see, okay, wow, you know, our cardboard just like changed so much. What happened? What did you do in those 10 years that made that change? Was it purchasing changes with Amazon, or was it a ban that, you know, the commercial cardboard ban at the landfill, or was it something else? And so that's really helpful to be able to see that, you know, if you can identify what you think the change was, that might be an effective tool to use on some other material, right? So if it worked for cardboard, is it something you can apply to C&D, or, you know? So that is going to be a interesting part of the next meeting. I think probably even more so than talking about the specifics of all the programs and everything is, you know, okay, so what's in the waste stream now based on those programs? All right, so this is still... We're going to go through each part of the background. So the solid waste collection, we'll talk a little bit about residential and commercial collection. We'll talk about the existing source reduction activities, existing recycling and bioconversion. There's the special waste management activities that are happening, the household hazardous waste and electronic waste, any public education and information that is happening now, what sort of processing and market information we can put in, and then there is a section all on facilities, so we'll talk about the transfer stations and landfill. So that's a pretty long, that could be a whole report in itself, really, that section. But then the next part, section two, is really where we dive into that solid waste generation and composition period, and that's where the waste characterization study will be most important. And in that, we're going to be talking about what the planning period is, looking at population projections during that time. So this plan is supposed to take us out, you know, 10 years. So what do we anticipate the population to do during that time? Then we'll talk a little about some current generation quantities and future generation quantities. This is the spot where we will pull in kind of a summary level of the waste characterization study. And so it's going to be a place where we basically, it's the boiled down version of the report that you just had done. And that will be helpful to, you know, utilize throughout the rest of the report. Then we start getting into more of the specific kind of topic. So the first one that's covered, and this is one of the requirements in the HRS, is source reduction. So we'll talk a little bit about the purpose, talk a little bit about the legislative We're just gonna like do a real glaze of the current because we'll reference you back to section one for the details. And then it jumps into the strategies for improvement. So we'll have some in-house efforts that are being done by the county. We'll talk about, you know, what sort of strategies are there for residents and for commercial, for businesses, hotels, restaurants, those sort of things. And then that section wraps up with an action item summary. So that's going to be, you know, pulling together all of the different options that are pulled together in the strategy section, and then having kind of like a summary of all of them in one spot that you don't have to dive through it again to remember what you just read. Are there any questions about that so far, or thoughts on things? All right, so in a similar fashion, each of these sections are pretty much set up in a very similar way. You know, starting with the purpose and the legislative piece. But then we're going to be talking about strategies to improve the recycling program and strategies for improving the bioconversion program. And then the impact on recycling and bioconversion quantities based on any proposed strategies that you think there are. So there was... as part of the zero waste ordinance, there were several activities that were proposed, and there was itemized kind of recovery percentages associated with each of those. So it'll be something similar to that. So whatever recycling, bioconversion activities that we identify as a group and decide to put into the plan, then that next part is, well, what is the impact of each of those? What do we think it's actually going to do?
Question.
Yes.
What is bioconversion?
So that's really just like composting or anaerobic digestion. So it's organic material like green waste, food waste.
So it's composting and waste energy?
Yeah, as long as it's organic material. So food waste, green waste, you know, those kind of things. Yeah. All right. Then the next section will be section 5, another requirement, special waste. And this one tends to be relatively long because there's a long list of special wastes. And it's done so it, because of that, it is going to have a slightly different structure than most of the other sections. And so for this particular section, for each kind of material, we're going to go through some existing practices and then plan recommendations, and then we'll go to the next material. So we'll start with asbestos and agricultural waste. We'll do infectious medical wastes, abandoned and derelict vehicles, sewage sludge, white goods, tires, used motor oil, all kinds of batteries.
Question?
Yes.
You think it's landfill. Yeah, but we're looking at, we got a grant from the State Department of Health, and the wastewater guys are looking at options for composting. So hopefully, it's about 5% of the waste stream. And not just what we generate, but private generation as well. So yeah, overall, 5%.
Will we have an opportunity to learn a little bit more about that, what they're thinking about
sure,
doing?
Sure.
Yeah.
Don't know if it's feasible, but you could potentially compost sewage sludge and have a nutrient rich.
Yeah.
But you got to get your proportions right. You're having problems in California with incorrect calculations of how long it takes to properly compost.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to have your permitting that goes along with it, yeah.
And follow up testing.
Yeah. But there are places that are successfully doing it, so. Then we changed this to just pressurized tanks because we're finding there are a number of different pressurized tanks that are showing up in the system, and we needed to talk about all of them, not just a portion of them. So that's why it's more general. And we'll talk about used cooking oil, Construction and demolition materials fall in this special waste category as well, although they probably could have a whole chapter all to themselves. And then finish that one up with an action item summary as well. So, any questions so far or thoughts on that one? All right. Moving to section 6 then. This one is both household hazardous waste and electronic waste. And back to the regular kind of setup where we have the legislative, a little brief bit about existing practices, and then the plan recommendations for first household hazardous waste and then electronic waste. Finish up with the action item summary. Section 7 is the public education and information component. And so this is where we talk about any sort of engagement. So if there is some sort of school activity that we need to talk about here, this is where this would go. Or if there, you know, the county currently goes to fairs and provides information. So all of the different avenues for sharing information, websites, any sort of email distribution lists, those kind of things, that sort of information will come into this section. And this is a really important one. It's not only just required, but, you know, if you don't have the right resources and materials to share what you're doing, it makes it very difficult to have success with the systems and the programs you have set up. Yeah. Any thoughts on those sections? No? Save them for you later?
Yeah, it sounds like right now we're just going over what the draft, how it's structured.
Yeah, but I want to make sure if you...
Are we going to dive into the meat of each one of these?
We certainly, I would love to do that, yes. And so I can speed up, we can get through this, and then we can jump to the sections you want, if that sounds like a good way to go. Okay. So then section 8 is the materials, marketing, and procurement. Things that have happened, you know, so far with this, like, there's some things that have been great. They've gone paperless with all their procurement system. But then that will cover some of that, and some of that will be in resource reduction. But then a lot of this is about like the recycling markets, which will be a very interesting this plan because of everything that's been happening. So that goes through a whole list of the various material markets that we need to discuss. Section 9 is all about facilities, existing facilities, future needs. We also need to talk about the facility siting process. So for those of you that have mentioned, you know, where is the landfill going to be and what's the process, that is going to be covered in this plan as well, at least a part of that.
We should add the Quiet Resource Center as one of our facilities.
Okay. Yeah. And then, so then this is the evaluation of the long-term disposal options. We'll do a 30-year look out, and then this is where we bring in also looking at alternative disposal technologies. Section 11 is the energy balance. 12, this is that part about system cost analysis. And then this kind of wraps everything together into an implementation plan, and it has both the time frames and costs, etc. So that is the meat of the plan.
And trying to implement the plan, that last section was very helpful to me. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I just look at the chart. Okay, what should I be doing now? And where are we on this list?
No, that's good to know.
I like that part of that section.
This back up so we can peek at all the sections. All right, so this is the spot where we really want to hear your feedback. I think we're probably a little ahead of schedule. So I'd like to kind of go around. If you want to go section by section, we could do that and give some feedback, or you could give me, you know, 3, go to the next person, we could keep going in circles. Does anyone have a preference for how we go about this?
I was going to start with just like a little preemptive comment before we dive into any particular section.
Sure.
But I was going to say, a lot of the work that I do is, part of it is public outreach. I get to interact with a lot of residents around the island, and they see Zero Waste Kauai as kind of a eco-green service, and so I get a lot of interesting ideas and suggestions from people. What I'm curious about is, you guys are the industry, professionals, are the ones providing services. I'm really curious to hear from you all, kind of what's innovative to you, where your head's at, what you think can be done, and if you pull it, I mean, for a moment to shoot for the stars, but then all of that is completely determined. I think this plan all has to be focused around the county's budget and what's realistic, because it's cool to talk about innovative technologies and stuff like that, the number really matters if there's no budget to implement it. So that's what I'm really curious about, is like what's implementable. So yeah, I'm excited to hear from all you guys. I can jump in and talk about a few of these sections for like policy.
Okay.
Speaking of budget,
do
you want to mention what
we're going to talk about this? Sure. Do you want me to? Yeah, so we actually had a great meeting yesterday with
Felig and the mayor.
Thank you. And one of the things that they were interested in is, you know, talking about making it economically feasible, but looking at it a little bit differently. So a lot of times with projects, you know, you hear your return on investment and you're looking at your initial capital outlays and your typical kind of cost pieces. But what's often overlooked and forgotten in that is what is the bigger picture, right? So say, yeah, a MRF is expensive, but what's the alternative? How expensive is that? Finding a new landfill site and landfilling is expensive. You know, that whole process of the whole siting and permitting and, you know, design, construction, all of that is expensive too. So they encouraged us to vote a couple of things. Look at the bigger picture, not just focus in on a particular item, but also to kind of monetize other things too. So like, there are benefits to doing certain, options. They have, there's climate benefits that, you know, some things generate fewer greenhouse gas emissions, some things generate more jobs, and so they really encourage us within, you know, the reasonable bounds of what we can do under this study to look at costs from a slightly different way, which is really encouraging. I mean, so often it's just very black and white, this is what it costs, too much, let's move on to the next item. And so just at least from an initial outreach to them and starting to hear some of their priorities, that was very encouraging.
Yeah. And yeah, climate change is another big issue here, you know, for all of us in the county, really looking closely at that. So we're going to be incorporating climate change discussion into the plan update, things that benefit the environment, as opposed to emit more greenhouse gases, which is looking closely at that.
I would really encourage you too. There's many of you on this committee that wear lots of different hats and probably are part of groups that might even have some sort of goal or, part of it like climate action plan or, greenhouse reduction or sustainability goals, part of your company or whatever. If there are things like that, at the hotel, the Lodging and Tourism Association that you know your members are thinking about or as part of your, personal company, those kind of things are really helpful for us as a group to be thinking about too, because plans also need to have some goals and some measurable goals too, right? So it's not just this lofty idea, but we need to know, okay, this is what we want to do. How are we going to look at that? How are other places looking at this already? What's really important to the people that you all are representing? Because that would be a lot more meaningful. So
I was going to add a comment. There's still a lot of recent analysis about budget, and we look at expenses and how much it costs to implement things. There's some interesting studies that are coming out that we read about now in the last year that are showing for every dollar invested in environmentally friendly infrastructure, you're seeing know, $6 of savings. And so there's some new layers that you can add on for what potential savings are when you go for green infrastructure. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're comfortable and want to share that with the group, I'd encourage you, if you have something in particular in mind, that would be great.
You didn't bring them, but the OED brought in some people from the mainland to talk about climate change, resilience, and infrastructure investments. And stuff like that.
Okay.
For me, I was in the county. What are you guys? You guys did an analysis 2 years ago. I mean, 10 years retention. What are the big items that you see that need to be recycled? What is going to reduce the landfill? What are the large things that you see?
I think fibers like paper, mixed paper and cardboard. We still have challenges with cardboard. There's new challenges with cardboard. We did implement the ban at the landfill for commercial, and it really worked. But we still have a lot of residential cardboard that's getting generated by, you know, Amazon. You know, big box stores giving out the boxes to take your stuff home. And so those are some areas where we need some help. And then also construction demolition debris. It's a lot of waste that we could have solutions for. So things like drywall, things, even some of the concrete isn't getting separated and recycled when it could be, when the cost of that is less than. So maybe even looking at some bans to get that going. And then organic waste. Like, we don't have a ton of food waste, but we could definitely, we only have 10% of our waste stream is food waste. So that's pretty good compared to other municipalities. And we don't know why, but it's a good thing to have a low waste stream there. But there's definitely ways we can reduce food waste, and also maybe some new technologies for organic waste management. Because all those things, the more we can keep stuff on island, I think, and manage our waste on island, the better, because the environmental footprint of shipping stuff off island, you know, is bad, and markets aren't really bad too. So,
is the problem with cardboard, is it like condition stuff, is it market conditions, and that kind of stuff, or cardboard, is it like a condensate and such?
Well, I mean, so the restrictions are just incredible now. I mean, for contamination, and now they're even looking at moisture as a problem. And so previously, Gardenell Disposal could pick up cardboard from places that, you know, gathered it in a pile over time, and it would be recyclable. But now, if it's not covered, I mean, it doesn't meet the moisture contents, and they get fined, they get, you know, rejected, and so we're going to have to come up with some new, you know, rules really for how people bring cardboard to GID, how people collect it,
and store it at home, and education too. I think that's the other part, though, is that people don't realize it is a problem. You know, you've been doing things a certain way, and you may have heard some things about the China sword and the contamination, but I think the average person doesn't equate, you know, moisture to contamination. So you might have a stack of your cardboard and it looks just fine, it got some rain on it, and now you take it in and it's junk, right?
Yeah, so the point, like, China got to where it's maybe 1% or something, and the problem is we ship it, well, one, and we get fine, but the other thing is then they will cut us off. And then if we can't ship it, then what do we do now?
And they ship it back. So now you've got this amazing footprint that you've just taken something here, you've shipped it all the way back, now it's coming back here, now it's getting landfilled. And what a waste, you know. So, yes.
Just gonna come out so you know where I stand, waste energy. That is the best possible fuel right there for a plant. And the footprint of shipping that stuff out, plastics. It's just, I think we gotta concentrate on taking as much of the waste stream as possible and converting it to something useful, which is energy, which we also need because we import tons of fuel. can take care of so many things. The technology is out there. The cost may be high, but you know, my biggest fear now that we don't have any, well, we can take advantage of it underneath is, you know, if we have a hurricane, you know, we're going to have a major disaster if we don't have, you know, a plan to process all this construction of wood-based.
So waste energy, there are different technologies. I mean, we have looked at it time and time again. We recently did a request for proposals about 3 years ago, and there weren't any viable projects at that time. But this is an evolving, you know, system. So, I mean, we initially, in the last plan, looked at mass burn waste energy, and we were told, and even KIUC interjected, he wasn't able to make it the meeting this time, just that, you know, a mass burn technology isn't a good fit for Kauai. But that's not to say that other waste to energy conversion technologies wouldn't work, you know, like anaerobic digestion and other systems, for sure. And one more thing I want to point out in that question is another really exciting thing that's happening on Kauai that people don't really know about is like backhauling of materials from big box stores. They're backhauling pallets, plastic wrap, cardboard, and, you know, being able to set up a system like that, and also working with the shipping companies, because a lot of containers do go back empty. Like, how can we as a task force, you know, make that happen? I don't know, but I know in Alaska, I attended a recycling conference, and in Alaska they ship mixed materials, recyclables, and everything backhaul. You know, just they bail mixed materials and backhaul. So,
do we know where it goes when it gets backhauled?
Yeah, I can check with the gal. I didn't get the exact location, but you know, I know that it's possible in areas like ours where we're, you know, isolated from markets, we're far away from markets. So just trying to look at new ways that we can. I know Barnard Disposal does great work, especially in these times, trying to find markets when they're shifting all over the place, you know, and they have a great book that does that, and just trying to, you know, tag onto that so that you can lower shipping costs and containers go that way.
And also just locally backhauling too, even with different commodities, you know, so like, if I think I understand sometimes people drop off asphalt and concrete, you guys grind it, and then that same person can pick up a load of some of the road base that you have on site, right? So I think, you know, using some best practices that are happening already at successful places that we can implement with other materials, or try to let other people know about more, or even try to, if you think that there's some sort of barrier that's holding it back from even going to its ultimate potential, you know, that's what we want to talk about.
I like the stores, if it could be implemented into, you buy something from Home Depot,
right,
you can bring back the cardboard and drop it off, and they got to take care of it and haul it.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to...
That producer responsibility is so important. Yeah.
I mean, that would be huge. Yeah, all the stuff you buy, you can get that stuff back.
I couldn't hear you. Would you mind repeating that?
My question is, you know, if our existing plant that grows leeches,
cardboard crisis a couple of years ago, I did call them and ask, you know, hey, you know, interim, temporary, could you take cardboard? And they said it's not on permit. But, I mean, they could revise their permit probably. So,
right? I did chime in on that.
Yeah.
Yes, that's the technology that you can burn all sorts of waste. That's what we did with the sugar mills for 100 years, right? It's just complying with the Clean Air Act requirements, which is the hard part, and that's why, you know, the way those guys are set up, they're never going to be able to burn anything else. That's like there's a disaster declaration made, possibly they could burn lumber or something if the resident waived the Clean Air Act requirements or something. Then they can burn stuff like that. If that's the technology, it exists. It's right there. It's just not permitted for that.
Well, I think there is that statement of permits. In other words, you're asking what can be done.
Mm-hmm.
The technology is not the issue. It's
the permitting
authority reach of government.
Okay.
And the phone.
Oh, the government.
I mean, well, it's you guys giving them the permit and pushing the
problem. There's emission controls that can take care of all that, and it comes at a cost. That's why waste energy is so expensive. It can be done. You know, you just decide what you want to burn. Plastic tires, you know, dioxins, whatever. All that can be scrubbed at a price to make it legal, but it comes at a price.
I want to ask, is it front, you're from Seattle?
Portland, yes.
So what do they do with cardboard? All of those recyclables over there. Are they burning them? Are they shipping
them? We ship them.
So everything's been shipped.
A lot of things are being shipped. But there are more kind of up and coming technologies too. So even like I live kind of west of Portland, but there's a close by city, Tiger, that has, they're taking styrofoam and they're converting it back to styrene oil. So you know, you've probably been hearing a little bit more about different kinds of chemical recycling, which is, most recycling is mechanical recycling, where things are actually shredded and, you know, sorted into different types and such. But chemical recycling is utilizing, you know, a variety of different processes, but it's really breaking it back down to its elemental forms. And so, for instance, like styrofoam, they can turn it back into styrene oil. And this is like a rapidly developing kind of technology situation. It's actually a really exciting time. Elizabeth and I are both chemical engineers, so it's like really exciting for us. But, but you know, there's lots of things happening. And you know, even like Boise, they're collecting, they have something called an orange bag program, and it's pretty cool because what they did is instead of figuring out how to like add all of the bins that you need to add a new waste stream, they have these huge, you know, very sturdy orange bags, kind of like a yard debris bag, and they have been putting their problem plastics into it. They were shipping it to a facility in Salt Lake City, which was using a version, a different kind of chemical recycling, and then they were generating both a product and energy from it. So they're you know, things are changing. And while many things have been, you know, either too expensive or very difficult to permit, there have been places that are making progress in this area. And there are also making ways of kind of making the technology a little bit smaller, you know. So while you don't have to have as much material in the past to make it economically feasible, they're finding ways to make it smaller. So it's a good time to be watching new technology, seeing what's out there, seeing if it's implementable here. Yeah.
One of the components you had within the special waste was agricultural waste. How is that defined?
Why? I have to go back and look. I don't remember exactly what all is in that. Let me see if I can pull that up. Usually, though, it's like the any farm-generated kind of stuff. So there's the manure, there's the dead bodies, animals, and things like that.
So it's probably other than green waste that's generated on the farm.
This green doesn't include green waste, too.
It's generated on the farm.
Agricultural waste. He's saying it's
from farm?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Just anything that's done.
Okay. Yeah, sorry.
Did you have any specific questions? Mr. Farmer?
Well,
I do. I the organic waste, especially the high carbon content associated with greenways, is extremely valuable for building soil. How that's dealt with now is a bit of a mystery. Most farms deal with it on farm, and it never touches the system, so to speak. But the non-farm agricultural waste, animal carcasses, even the sewage waste, that kind of stuff, I don't know how much of that is actually in our system. So it's being produced, it's being dealt with on an individual basis, kind of like somebody burying the trash in their backyard. Is that covered in the waste stream analysis? Do we do that at all?
Maybe not. Well, I mean,
well, but you looked at
if it's on the farm in the backyard, no, it's not covered, because what we looked at was what came to the landfill, and it was all sorted at the landfill.
Okay.
So yeah, if it's
so it's what's actually coming into your disposal stream.
Yeah, we try to look at generation in general, like what comes onto the island, what goes to the landfill, and what we know gets diverted. That was kind of a new spin on the plan, but I bet you the ag waste that's dealt with on the farm, we did not look at that.
Well, and even some of the ag waste that is showing up in the landfill is very valuable from a bioconversion point of view. To go back into the soil, those nutrients and the matter. I have an import huge amount of fertilizer every single year, which is being brought in from somewhere. If I can offset that, or the farming industry in the island or the state can offset that, that's massive. So, the governor, with his declaration of food sustainability, is one thing, but if we have to do that food sustainability at the expense of bringing in additional fertilizers and inputs, then we're really not fixing everything, but just offsetting the problem. So, all right, that answers my question.
Will you take green waste from all the county collection centers? I mean, I guess my question is, with all the compost green waste areas that the county manages, does 100% of that go out?
Yeah, we have, right now there's 4 permitted composting facilities on the island. And then 3 of them have been taking the county green waste next. There'll be 2 in a couple months. There'll just be 2 that won bids that are going to do it. So everything, all the green waste is getting composted at permitted composting facilities at this time that the county takes in. And that's our largest waste stream.
But does it?
It turns it some, so it depends on how they manage it. One of the companies does turn it into compost, another land applies. They both make compost. Sometimes they have to land apply it.
Most of it is stockpile.
Yeah.
Because there isn't a way to economically get it back into the agricultural industry at a larger scale.
But, you know, I just want to make a comment about burning is, the problem I have with burning is just that once you burn something, you lose that resource forever. Now, obviously, stuff's going to landfill. Unless we mine the landfill, then that's going away forever, too. But the idea of burning things that could be, made into new products, especially here on island, I understand shipping stuff the way, causes a lot of environmental problems, too. But, yeah, I would hate to burn stuff that could be made into, soil or other products that could be used on that.
But it seems like there's just no market for that.
It's being marketed, the compost is being marketed, like that heart and soul.
But you said there's excess, it's not all being utilized, right?
Not currently, but the composting facility on North Shore that currently takes the Pa'anale, the Hui, Pa'anale. There is a need. He needs to do better at marketing. He needs to do better solutions where we can end the greenways, we're turning the soils, we're back on the farms, we're growing food, we're eating food here, kind of thing. And, but the other thing is to do better and is to spend money on marketing and, you know, look at how to get this product out.
So you think it's a quality and a marketing issue right now?
He doesn't, he's not doing any marketing. He doesn't have a website, he doesn't have a, you know, his online presence at all, he's, and then he needs to build relationships with farmers and stuff like that. I talked and spoke with him yesterday about how he needs a marketing team, and he needs to, and Mark Freeman on the North Shore is going to start taking along the material, and for the first year he's going to be able to deal with it all on his own, kind of connections to where he's going to land, applying it on the farms. But then he's going to need to start selling his compost or creating some kind of relationship with people putting that soil somewhere because it's going to fill up, he's not enough space for it.
So, sorry.
Well, that's where those market development grants come in, where like we as a team could figure out like where should these grants go if the county's available to come up with funding, because there's places where we can, you know, move and make progress, but there's just, they need a little help.
So similar to the back shipping, to truck everything to one side of the island on the compost and truck it back to various farms. Transportation costs very quickly except the value of the material itself. So that's one of the infrastructure questions that we ask, is how do we site things in such a way that it's more economically feasible to use. So.
Well, and that's why we kind of scrapped the centralized composting facility that was they came up with in the last plan, because we realized that we have regional composting facilities that can better manage waste and, you know, get the finished product out regionally. So yeah, that's really important.
So that was the one facility. You think it's a quality and a marketing issue for the other?
All the facilities that are permitted.
The four facilities.
I think I heard the comment that the green waste is the single largest of our waste stream.
Of our diversion stream.
Our diversion stream.
Yeah, we're doing a fantastic job with diverting green waste without any mandates or anything. I mean, on the public, commercial, it is restricted at landfill, so that helps.
I have a question for this.
Yeah.
With regard to the study. And I'm assuming that's farther along.
We're actually in the very final stages of that plan. Yeah.
So, would there be suitable elements of that plan?
Some information sharing?
And especially with composting.
Right.
So, even the discussion we had about the AEG type of combustion. I'm sure that's part of the plan as well. That
yeah, I mean,
percentage of the companies.
Their plan has all of these same sections and has, you know, gone through a very extensive process of looking at each section, looking at opportunities. Elizabeth's been addressing a lot of comments from the public. And so, yes, the pieces of that are, you know, implementable to this island, then we'll certainly look at that. We can bring that up as we're talking about them. You know, but you do have to remember that you are different places and different sizes, and you have a lot of differences in the kind of resources you have available, both financially and infrastructure speaking. So, you know, but there are pieces that are certainly relevant.
Sounds like a good opportunity for Corey May to go home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Eli's product.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's regulation that prevents the usage of the very same materials that you like to use. You look at the airport runway, the recycling, all that propylene material. Well, the airport's hoarding it right now, but if they could sell it to private consumers.
Yeah.
Do you think it's actual regulations, or, and this is just a question, or is it a misunderstanding too of some?
No, it is clearly the way the specifications are written, and it's driven by statute.
Okay.
I've been trying to use propane for under buildings for I'd use it.
Road wind and stuff like that.
I did a housing project for HHA, which I don't know how it right across the ferry to Mexico. About 250 units.
So with your marketing grants, that might be something that we could look at. You know, there are places that have been successful in rewriting their specifications for a variety of different things, you know, using glass and different kinds of your road base, and also just in mixing it. There's places that have successfully done that, and you know, there's places that are successfully doing compost, making sure compost gets into your Department of Transportation specifications so that they use it on their projects. And so maybe perhaps it's looking at what the specific regulatory or barrier is, how easy it is to make a change, and that grant might be a push to either help make the change or help re-educate so that something else is different to fit within the specs.
I think the change of the specifications are yeah, they're advocated. We built the facility 7 years back. Our old facility, we wanted to use recycled concrete, and permitting and allowing, there was so much pushback on it. Why not? It's my building. I want to do it this way. I believe in this. I'm sure you guys, I said, you guys, if you want to do this, this crushed concrete for uses that are beyond what you can use it for. You know that it's great material. Mm-hmm. But those specifications really handcuff guys like you like to the market.
Okay.
I think the Caltrans and California, they want to change a lot of their stuff around to accept.
Right.
All of the recycled aggregates and everything that's out there.
In fact, they require you to use a certain amount.
And then they require you, yeah, there's nothing required, but like, it's just old. It's old specifications that have never been changed. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of, Conrad probably named that, and a bunch more, like obviously, just things that status quo.
Okay. Well, maybe, and like, for the next meeting, it would be great if you thought about like some specific code or specification that trouble you all the time.
Maybe
that
we could email it to
you. Yeah, that we could actually look at, you know, because maybe there is something that we could do as we're looking at options and strategies of comparing what you have, what other places are doing, what Caltrans is doing, yeah, what WashDOT is doing. I mean, there's places that have made that change successfully. And, you know, California with their strict earthquake requirements can make a change that other places probably can too.
Well, I think it goes all the way down to that green energy is maybe accepting something from Brent with their wood chips like cardboard or clean lumber or whatever it be. And that's another thing that's why we said through the government, yeah, you know. So even that, on that side. My side with the aggregate thing, I mean, I don't have, it's a big thing, but like Conrad brought up, there is a lot of material, like the cold things in there that could be used, that would save aggregate being mined from the quarry or something, or trucking on the road, you know, all of those things. So, I mean, it would save natural resources, basically. Mm-hmm.
Which maybe that's something we can monetize a little bit, since we've been challenged to look at things differently. That's great.
So I think I'm going to jump in and talk a little bit about kind of where my focus is at. I'm curious to hear what else is.
You're going to say something a little while ago?
Yeah. So I really like on-island solutions. When we look at it overall, kind of footprint, the stuff that I want to focus on, you can identify. by on-island solutions. Not everything can be, not even close to everything can be an on-island solution. You know, scale of economics here, there are certain things we can't do. A lot of my focus is going to be on composting. Food waste, like Allison's been saying recently, that we're doing really well in comparison to other municipalities, but there's still 10% of the waste stream is food waste. So I'm looking at that. There's a lot of infrastructure needs around being able to deal with food waste. Instead of it going to the landfill, they have to go to composting facilities. There's a ton of permitting, old, regular, and maybe very sound regulations around pathogens and dealing with food waste and stuff like that that I have to look at. Composting, to me, you're going to hear me kind of yabber on about it, because I believe in Kauai having a strong agricultural economy, and composting is just such an essential part of the process to generate soil here, so that we're not shipping in a ton of fertilizers if possible. We can take all the stuff that we're throwing in the landfill, or some of the stuff that we're throwing in the landfill, we can get it to a compost facility, turn it back into wood, do it with farmers. One of those things would be soil cardboard. Cardboard could be compostable if it didn't meet the contamination limits, if it goes to GIP or something like that. There's conversations that are happening. Wood pellets. Pallets could be compostable. You know, there's a lot of stuff. I was going to say, composting is a big focus for me. There's much stuff. I think the construction demolition is a super important part of this conversation. It's not my area of expertise. I don't have the ability to deal with it at all. But I hope to see that could be done for years. I'm really curious about that conversation. Source reduction. You know, what I find with my work is dealing with trash and trying to improve waste management systems is like dealing with trying to put a band-aid on a bleeding artery kind of thing. It's dealing with the tail end of stuff, but if there's some conversations around how we can work with manufacturers and people bringing stuff to the island, that's where you really would be kind of a game changer for how much stuff is coming to the landfill.
Plastics,
we're doing Costco. Backhauling's cool, but then there's still trash that we're still shipping from the mainland. So where does it go? It just goes to the landfill, maybe it gets recycled. I'm part of a working group that's going to take the next year, and they might be interested in working on that. So if any of you guys have good ideas about going to big box stores and talking to them, I can go to a group of people who want to focus on it. So that's important. It's like we can talk about waste management, but we also got to think about how we maybe potentially bring that stuff. Kind of a potentially controversial idea, but I'm down to talk about it. And then I was going to say, the revising statutes, revising laws. I'm curious what that journey looks like. What I've seen is there's a process and there's steps to it. We've got to get legislators on board. Ideally, to some extent, get the public on board. There's education involved with that, teaching people how that's important. Looking at that journey, if anybody has any recommendations, then I would do that. And then I was going to say, I do a lot of public outreach. I'm not trying to be an environmental activist at all. I'm trying to help people understand what the issues are and what possible solutions are. For example, I'm very grateful to Garden Health Disposal that everything that you guys have been doing for this island for a long time has been amazing. So I get to talk to people a lot about what's going on, so I'm happy to kind of talk up what you guys are doing and represent innovative solutions and stuff like that. A lot of people don't have any clue what the situation is, what's recyclable, what happens to recycling, and they have lots of great ideas about innovative technologies, what's realistic and stuff like that. So I'm happy to be a positive representation to the community. After this meeting, I got a chance to the West Side and we talked to 8th graders about this. So I can put the word out. I think that's all I got for right now.
Awesome. Thank you.
I go to want to be a dollar for Eli and Conrad.
Come on.
Go ahead.
I totally agree. with getting the ordinance, so let me share my frustration. There is an ordinance, I believe, that requires the state to, and I told this to them, my complaint was, so you folks know that, with ordinances. Glass is a natural cover for landfill, from my initial meeting with the Department of Health, which we got on about when we started this high five program. But nobody wants to come out and say, let's use it, because the public perception was going to be bad. That was my understanding. It frustrates me because we have to ship it out, we can't do anything with it. And the second part is you're supposed to, and I thought it was still, you're supposed to pay extra X amount of miles with glass at the aggregate, but your Grace Pacific or Bidwell or whoever does it complains that you don't have enough glass and it's too hard to clean or whatever, so nobody enforces the ordinance. So it never gets done, it never gets used for that purposes. So ordinances are good, but if it's not enforced, it becomes frustrating. I can vouch for that from my side. Just with a glass.
That's helpful. That's a good perspective.
So there's an opportunity to use glass, but then we're not doing it? Is that what it is? Or?
I believe that's how I'm viewing it. I could be wrong. That's my point of view, from what I understand.
Are you swimming in glass down there?
Well, but glass is just, you lose, it's a big problem. It's, you know, if you could keep it here on island, it's a lot easier to try to live. Basically, we have to ship it to California.
So Scott's dealing with the high five glass, which there is a lot of high five recycling going on because they have the economic incentive. So the high five program favors shipping it off island. There's a better return for on the handling fee to ship it off, as opposed to keeping it on island and doing other uses. The state did a study on glass. It was Cascadia. The auditors hired Cascadia to do the study.
Well, I don't know, let me clarify. Okay. So as far as on the DEC side, I think the glass goes out of state because that's where the market is. It's not that we set up for the policy things like that. But anyway, just to back up a little bit.
And it stopped everybody from stockpiling to use it for other purposes.
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of context. So we have a couple of programs that address glass. So BBC obviously one. And then we also have the Glass Advanced Disposal Fee Program, which collects a penny and a half on non-BBC glass containers. So I was going to say many discharge, but a lot of those come glass right now. But I mean, but you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
Non-BBC glass containers. So what Scott said is actually pretty accurate. So we collect a penny and a half. The way that program is set up is we contract out with the counties and we push the money out, the majority of the money out to the counties. And then operate glass buyback programs. So what Scott was talking about was that, yes, so we've had over the years multiple requests to allow that collected glass to be used as landfill cover. So there's a couple of parts to that. So one is on the engineering side, permitting side, it does meet the specifications. So it could be theoretically used as alternative recovery on that case. But on the other side, and which is pretty accurate on public perception, is that we resisted approving it for use just because it's applying it at the landfill. So it's really, I mean, you can call it public perception, but I mean, it's fact. It's like we're collecting public funds, and then if we then allow it to be used as ABC at the landfill, I mean, it's great. It's
that's an education thing.
And you also still have to have cover for your landfill. Exactly. So if you're not using a material that
producing dirt,
right?
So on the letter of the law side of things, engineering kind of perspective, yes, right, it's replacing, you know, whatever you're using is
ABC now. So, you know, economically, yeah, it does make sense. But, you know, we are collecting public funds.
Or we blended it somewhere else. 50-50 dirt, glass or something.
Glass is just really difficult.
So what do you think it would take to change public perception? Because it's very valuable to be using a material you already have, yeah, as opposed to, you know, getting dirt somewhere else, moving it, the environmental footprint that is associated with that. So, I mean,
you write up a public,
like a white paper on, you know, why using...
I mean, it's a good question, because that was like going to be sort of one of my really global comments on just the whole process and sort of the importance of public education communication right now. Because recently, like very recently, actively now, we're getting inquiries from NGOs, from press, that kind of thing, you know, all related to the China plant now, because people are thinking that, you know, our stuff is just going into the landfill now.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there are difficulties with like the curbside collective material and that kind of thing, but you know, we're having to explain to people that as far as like our DBC and ADF materials, and like, you know, we keep close track on that, we need documentation before we pay out on any of that stuff, and that stuff is still moving. There are still markets for that stuff, but yes, there are challenges, right, in portions of the recycling markets, and so, you know, we're having to explain that more and more, very recently.
So are we.
Yeah,
so are
yeah,
all the
everybody.
So are you changing how you're informing people because there's a greater need for more information, or?
Not actively now, but I guess what we're just talking about during the day. So we sort of speaking to the source reduction side of things. We are right now, the DOH is getting a plastic reduction working group up and running. This past legislature, the ledge passed a law tasking us to organize and run this plastic source reduction. So we're right on the verge of having a first meeting, we're planning it for next month. So we're going to put it in. So we're getting organized for that. And if any of you are interested, you can go look on the ledger site. It's at 254. It's all spelled out, sort of who's in the group, what the ledger wants the group to discuss, which is essentially social plastic. Social reduction, focus on plastic. So yeah, right now that's sort of our main focus. Yes, I think as part of that, there's going to be inquiries. Maybe that's in our invite.
So you'll be part of that?
We are. Yeah, we're kind of in a strange position where we administer the group, and we also are a member of the working group. So what we've done is we have a new facilitator on board, and then we have our sitting member on the working group, and our staff is going to support it.
So those will be happening though as we're going through this process.
Yeah.
How much of it can be shared back with this group?
The public meetings, mm-hmm, is a public working group, so I can bring information as we progress. So
that would be great.
So start first meeting. We're trying to get a first meeting possibly to begin next month, December. We'll see how the first meeting goes.
Okay.
But then we're planning on taking a break during the legislature session just because it takes up so much of our time and everything. And then picking it up again April, May, the end of session, and then we're wrapping it up probably by September, October, because we need to report back to the ledge for the 21 session.
Okay. Well, that would be awesome if you could come back and, you know, share with this group what you're finding about with the group.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm thinking of a couple of things. One is a matrix on all of the recyclables, what can be done here on island, and what we have to ship off
out
of the markets to So it's communication.
For educational, yeah, that would help with our conversations.
The other thing is we increased the GED for 10 years so we can start paving our roads. I'm thinking this resource we got, glass and coal plane sitting out there on the airport, is that being part of the mix? How we can lower the price, pave more roads, less cost to the taxpayer? I don't know.
There's a resistance for some reason to
resistance?
Well, they'll tell you there won't be enough glass. That'll be what, for Hawaiians, they'll probably tell you that that's why they don't want to clean the machines. That's what they're going to say. They don't want to go through a hassle. And you can't produce enough. That's what I've heard.
So is there a specific percentage that it optimizes for them? Or?
Well, it's more technical because you know, paving for that different gradation from very fine to average chips. Glass typically doesn't have any fines.
Mm-hmm. Can it be to having glass circuit products that concrete?
All glass dogs is just like any other aggregate material, just generally boosts density. But it doesn't affect any of the material process. But like I said, you've got to add your second.
So that's the pile that's at the airport, they actually use that as when they repave the runway?
No, they don't use it for the asphalt itself, they use it for base on the asphalt.
So one of the things I'm working on in Guam right now is they actually have a greening roadways initiative, and so they're getting ready to do some demonstration projects where they're utilizing glass in a variety of different ways to see what they can actually make work with their specs and codes and projects that they have going on. So that'll be happening along the process here, and I'm working on that one. I will share what I find out as that comes along. So.
You know, as part of the matrix I was talking about, when I recycle a lot, I got 12 barrels at home and I separate everything, thinking I'm doing the world good, and then I saw this documentary where a lot of this stuff is shipped to Malaysia and then dumped on an island, and now it's their problem, you know. And then I guess there's a company in Australia that is looking at especially the plastics.
Right.
And repurpose them.
I've been in the industry for 25 years, and there's always this myth circulating around, like, you know, a rumor that, like, oh, all anything I recycle is going to the landfill, and it doesn't matter where you are or when it is, that myth circulates.
Right
now, it's a really good time for the myth to be alive, because we're having all these challenges with the market. But, you know, every once in a while put out a news release to remind people, hey, you know, we are working with a recycler who is reporting, all of our recyclers report to us where they, you know, they give us the bill of lading, they tell us where they're shipping their material so we know and it isn't getting landfilled. But that's something that needs to be re-educated constantly. And, you know, especially with that, that's a true story. I'm sure we didn't send our stuff to Indonesia, but, you know, somebody did. So.
I think the story was the government, you know, saw an opportunity, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We'll
we'll make some money on that, but now they're stuck.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, yeah. And that's kind of what happened to China in the big pictures.
Yeah. So this is really wonderful. Some of you are more vocal than others, so I really would like to take this chance and just like go one by one. And if you have anything else to add, I'd really love to hear it. And then we can probably move on into the next part where we're talking about stakeholders. Fred, do you have anything else that you wanted to make sure?
I tend to speak more from an ag component. I'm also on the board of agriculture dealing with that kind of stuff on the other side. Your comment on when it's burned, it's gone, I mean, other than the ash and
So a lot of what I'm looking at from a composting point of view is really the carbon capture. We know to take that. But composting isn't a single solution. In fact, none of this is going to be fixed with a single solution. It's going to be little bites at portions of it to the point where we're able to reduce overall. I need to go back and look at the 2017 waste composition study to maybe understand that a little bit more fully. But there's a tremendous amount of material that's brought in for agriculture that could be offset.
Do you have, like, is that pretty easy information to put together to see, like, how much fertilizer and everything we're actually bringing in?
Well, I know how much I'm bringing.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't know the full extent across the state, so whether it's fertilizer industries themselves. But then again, those are businesses that are making their living dealing with supplying these to customers, so
yeah.
I don't want to upset the market to the point where our the required fertilizer distributors fall apart, and now we have none of that, and we're completely relying on compost and whatnot. So we have to find that balance, and that's why I use the word offsets. If we find appropriate offsets that don't break markets, then that's where we need to press.
Okay.
Statistics on everything.
Yeah.
You just have to know where to look.
Yeah. I'm just curious with the groups that you work with, if that was an easy thing to come by. Or...
Do you happen to know if the composition of the compost currently made on island would be suitable to replace what you're getting from off island?
It's not a one-for-one replacement.
Okay.
There's a couple things that are going on. If the soil is healthier, and the micronutrients and other things, which are really what compost is, it's an inoculation of beneficial micronutrients as well as the carbon and other things that are in it, makes your soil more effective than you require in this fertilizer. Basically, the soil is able to extract the nutrients that are in the, you know, plants are able to extract the existing nutrients rather than having to pump synthetic or outside nutrients in. Whether it's synthetic or organic, you still have to add nutrients to make that up. So it's not a one-for-one pound of this, pound of that. It's really changing the way that the soil works. And as a large farm, I've got acres and acres and acres of soil that's constantly needing to be fed. How do I change the way I feed it so that it requires less monetary input?
And then there's all these like stacked benefits to getting that good soil going on, environmental benefits, so I think everything from erosion to, you know, seepage or leaching and stuff like that. So.
Okay, so as the soil gets healthier and we begin to use more cover crops, especially nitrogen fixing cover crops, then I have to have less nitrogen fertilizer. So,
but the specific compost, do you think it's high enough quality? I think. Is that what you were kind of wondering? Is if there's like issues with the compost? You said it's being stockpiled. Is it because it's what's wrong with it? Does it have plastics in it?
It's the transportation.
Yeah, it's the transportation.
Once it goes somewhere and gets composted, basically broken down and aged, then it needs to get to the whatever acre it's going to add to. And typically the cost of transportation exceed the value of the compost, so now it doesn't move.
Okay.
And it sits still. So a solution is compost on farm. The problem is most compost facilities are set up as based on permitting and based on contracting on available land, so the composting operation tends to be the only operation going on. Then it has to be set.
Okay, that's really positive. That's what we were hearing on a walk when we did that plan, was that the compost made strictly from green waste didn't have all the nutrients, and that's why they were hoping to add food waste so they could get some of the nutrients back into the compost so it could really be used, and that was the mission.
Well, and there's also the element of time. Compost gets better over time. We'll be adding just mulch, which is organic matter that's not really broken down and doesn't have the micronutrient density.
Okay.
Or are we adding other things
next to it, either food waste or time or water aeration, kind of things.
The right ingredients.
Well, and almost everything that I'm hearing in terms of carbon sequestration, it has more to do with building the ability of the soil to maintain its carbon density over time. And as that gets more and more dense, the organic matter that's in the soil, the more you're going to need to. But as that organic matter disappears from the soil, and it happens in a tropical environment, it's breaking down all the time. In a way, you're farming carbon. Plants just happen to be a byproduct.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did I get that right, Jess?
You got it.
All right.
That's the other major environmental like service that, you know, me and Fred's kind of been boys for. You're sucking carbon out of there, and you do it right. And there's all kinds of innovative projects across the country, across the globe, trying to suck carbon out of the air. It turns out, like, these natural systems are already doing it. You know, like, create these carbon mapping that cost billions of dollars.
There is right now, through State Department of Ag, a compost buyback. So right now, I don't know if it's still in place, it came out of midsummer. The state is giving farmers some cost matching. They're purchasing compost from certified composting facilities, and they get a certain match back.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe that overcomes the transportation issue, or I don't really know, but that's and it's been relatively small, and it was capped at a certain volume. So me as a large farmer,
did it work for you?
Can't go and just go, okay, I'll take some of that. It was capped at and I think it ended up working out at a 1 or 2 acre farm size. But that's another way that the state is trying to incentivize the farmers and help the folks that are in the compost.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Alan, how about you? Anything else you wanted to add?
You know, we deal with a lot of the specialty waste on that, including the scrap metals, the electronics, less gas cylinders, which is some of these things. And I think there could be a lot more help from manufacturers and suppliers. Specifically, if you look at compressed gas cylinders, it's a huge issue not only here but on all wagons. So, you know, inner gases, propane is one of the easiest to manage. Oxygen, nitrogen, that kind of stuff. It isn't that bad. You start getting into sensors, which are so expensive to get rid of. But the manufacturers or the suppliers, you know, they sell those. It's got your name. So is there something that we can do with the state and the suppliers to put more of that pressure back on them, more responsibility back on them? Same thing with the electronics. The electronics is where we collect 30,000 pounds a month. There's the market conditions that have worsened. OCC and metals and stuff like that. But it seems like the responsibility and the pressures on the site and not enough is going back to the manufacturers to have this sort of responsibility. Our challenges are logistics. Most of the stuff that we process here on Iowa needs to be shipped out. There's not a lot. There might be some stuff that we can break off and sell back into the others. To look at construction demolition, we really that was such a huge portion of the waste stream and the infrastructure solutions. We all know Garamond is not the only solution, so we can talk about that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. George?
You know, from the visitor industry, hotels, I just want to do a shout out for Jay Fofaro. You know, know, when he was in the industry, he was one of the leaders in recycling, you know, from the industry standpoint, working with Island Disposal, Steve Cowie, and I think most of the resorts are all on board. You know, our guests, our visitors, our owners with timeshare and condo resorts, you know, they come from states that have robust recycling programs, so they put it on us. They say, hey, you guys don't have a recycling program.
Right.
So the industry as a whole, I think, is, you know, trying to be a leader in making sure that, you know, we're not part of the problem or part of the solution. Mm-hmm. One program that we're using at Honolulu Bay Resort and trying to promote it to other resort companies is a company called Save the World. A lot of the shampoo, conditioner, you know, containers, they give us bins to ship it back, you know, either unused or partly used, and they repurpose it, and they send it out to either third world countries or places with disasters, so that people can use the shampoo and soap products. So, you know, that's one way of receiving it and getting back off the island and for good.
Okay. Thank you. Howard? No?
Nice
name. Okay. Eli?
By top of that, I don't know. I just, agenda wise, kind of like, for me, a lot of subjects, a lot of different topics, a lot of stuff. I don't know from you guys from the county, but it's the number top five topics of waste stream that needs help. I don't know, maybe in the next meetings we can get up there and get something nice we can focus on.
Yeah, I do think that looking at that items, study.
It's just the way my brain works.
No, that's true. Cool. The right is smart, it's the way to look at things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we can all come together on certain topics one at a time. It could be all of them through the course of this, but I'm going to tackle each one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think I found it interesting on the comment from the meeting with Mike and the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And how they want to look at it, because I guess that there's no other way to look at it. You guys have a real challenge ahead of us, because we can all sit here and say we want to do it, we should be doing it,
mm-hmm.
but still cost is going to be a big problem. And I, you know, just from a commodity market standpoint, right. Cardboard, you go from $150 a ton to $20 a ton. The Hi-Fi program, aluminum, because your money is there, 82-85 cents, it's 42 cents. Plastic from 22 cents to 2 cents. Your papers, which is your biggest thing, we're at minus $55 a ton, and that's shipping going out.
And it was 50 before.
It was minus 50, or it used to be 50 at one time, we're at minus $55 a ton, just to recycle it and ship it out. I mean, you know, good luck. You know, you guys the one got to push the programs to the council and the public. It's not easy. You know, we can sit there and say we'll do it, but then it's getting very challenging. The market, everything else, times have changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Thank you. Conrad?
I really don't have anything more. I think I have more questions after this discussion.
Okay.
Especially with regard to
Okay, well, that's our homework then. Yeah. We'll work on getting you some information so that you can look at that prior to the next meeting and maybe make it in a matrix.
Mm-hmm.
I like matrices as well.
Just what Scott was saying.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anything else? Or?
No? Okay. I mean, there's obviously many facets, but I think it's
$119 a ton, really, is it, are we doing the right thing? Because that's not what it costs to bury trash, $119. So what do we do? When I tell you guys, operationally, we got 7 to 9 years for the landfill is, you know, you guys all know, is how much trash we can put. Airspace is money. How much trash can we put in the cubic yard or whatever we got to work with? And we have good discussions. I don't know, it is a money thing. I like waste to energy, but then again, you get, I mean, he's not here, what's his name? KLUC, you still need a power purchase agreement. You know, how much power do they want to buy, if they even want to buy anymore? So, I mean, to try and find that balance with everything, it's a challenge. I mean, we got a tough job in the administration also, so.
Right.
Yeah, trying to find that balance.
Okay. Allison, I spoke a lot, so I'm good, but I really appreciate all the input here. It's so important for this process and important for the county, so I'm so glad we hit our 10-year point where we're doing this, because, you know, to get this kind of input and then to get it out to the public and have the public review it and really chime in, we need more support and guidance from people like you and from the public to be able to do a good job. So thanks again for being here.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Glad your plane worked out.
Yeah. I didn't want to shut you out the target on the next meeting, but yeah, I mean, whatever information, I mean, you know, questions, comments on state programs, I'll try to explain the context as best I can.
Well, and you have the unique perspective of going through this process of all the other counties, right? Yeah, so I mean, if you've seen different places handle things differently, so it's a valuable thing to bring to
you. But wait, you do have a kind of this, but actually, Dave is one of the best to work with, and not for this year. He's straightforward, and he'll tell you up front straight, but I don't like to get it, you know, round them all the way. Like, so we appreciate working with David, actually. He's been doing good, going through a program with us.
Good.
You know, like, shock and awe, we get a point across. Compared to Rick, you know, we talked about 100, maybe?
Tipping fee.
You know, I go to the transfer stations a lot. The Li Hui one is a real good example. You get a time lapse film of how much solid waste is generated just in a few hours at Li Hui. And then, you know, because the other ones you push down into, so you don't really get the full impact. But when you see that pile over there, and how fast that accumulates, just in a matter of hours, and that's all going. You know.
Yeah. So the very last thing that we wanted to talk about is just any other stakeholders, and what I mean by that is, you know, you all are the stakeholders that are representing the SWAC, collecting, you know, your feedback here, and I know many of you work with other groups and have places that you're engaged, and so I think it's really important to bring back as much as you're comfortable and capable of doing to this group so that it can benefit the larger group. And if you think that we're missing a particular voice here, it's important to speak up too. So like if we need to go and find some information about what's happening with sewage and with wastewater treatment plants, you know, please continue to let us know so that we can collect the right feedback. This is a public process. This is going out for public review, and so it really behooves us to get the plan as right as possible the first time so that when we get public comments, then, you know, we don't have to sort through lots and lots. But I just wanted to thank all of you so much for this great first meeting. And if you have feedback of what would be a more helpful format or things that we could get to you, like the waste characterization study or anything else.
So please, I will post the waste characterization study. That'll be up there.
Please let Allison know and we'll work on, you know, incorporating that into the future meetings.
Is that where it'll be posted?
Yes. So there'll be an introduction. You guys are all represented on there. Everybody knows you are in this committee. And then if you scroll down, there's documents. So we're going to have our agendas. We'll have the presentations, our meeting minutes. You want to talk about the meeting summary?
Yeah. So after each meeting, then we'll go through the process of we've been recording. We have an audio that we can post. We'll post to that. We're also going to have like some summary level kind of takeaways that were generated as part of the meeting so that those are written down as well. Our slides will be there. Agendas are there. Those types of things.
And then we'll approve the summary in the next meeting.
Correct. So we will send that out to take a look at. We'll talk about comments on the summary, and then that will be one of the first pieces of the meetings. So right now, yes, our next meeting, I believe, is in December. So we have some homework to do. We'll work on our notes. We'll send them out for your review. And then we will look forward to seeing you again. And let's see. I'll get the
date
here.
December 10th. And Conrad's excused.
Yes.
It's January.
Oh, it's the January. Okay, we'll see you in December.
So does anybody have any other questions or comments before we wrap up? No? Okay, well thanks
again.
Thanks for your part of your day. Yeah, if you could leave your place cards, we'll reuse them. So just leave them there, we'll collect them and use them again.